He had to ask Joanna, couldn't be done any other way. I've got to see the whites of her eyes when I pop the question to her. What's that LTV out there doing? She asked as casually as she could. The youngster turned lazily as he floated along the access tube so he could look back at her. Special job, he answered. Rumble is that there are some big gas bags coming up from Savannah on their way to Moonbase. Ultra VIP. They pooched out a backup LTV just to take them up to the base, quickie quick. How many? Ginny asked. Dunno, the kid said. Two or three from what I heard. Could be more, but not enough to fill a whole passenger pod. Ginny smiled to herself. There's my ride. Quickie quick. It was startlingly easy to talk her way onto the special LTV. Most of the crew at the station knew her. Most of the senior crew, at least. There was plenty of spare capacity aboard the nearly empty LTV, and an extra body visiting Moonbase for a couple of days wouldn't raise too many eyebrows, especially when the body was a former base director. Ginny was supposed to get permission from the current base director, of course, but she knew how to get around that problem. She simply accessed the proper file from the station's mainframe and okayed her own trip using the computer codes that hadn't been changed since she'd been running Moonbase. Easy. I'll say hello to Greg Masterson when I get there, she told herself. See his eyes pop. There were only two other passengers in the LTV's personnel pod. Ginny recognized the fat old guy as Professor Zimmerman, the nanotech whiz who had saved Doug Stavanger's life after the big solar flare the previous year. The woman with him looked familiar, but Ginny couldn't place her. She had California written all over her sandy-haired, tanned features. They ignored Ginny almost completely, talking to each other with deep seriousness as the LTV's co-pilot ducked in to make sure they were buckled safely into their seats. Silly safety regulation, Ginny thought. This bucket won't put out enough thrust to slosh the coffee in a cup, even on a high-energy burn to Moonbase. Still, when the red light came on and the rockets lit, she felt herself squeezed back into her seat. It was impossible to eat, sleep, and go to the bathroom over the 36-hour length of their flight without saying anything to the other passengers. When Ginny went past them to get to the meal dispenser, she hovered weightlessly by their seats long enough to say hello to Professor Zimmerman. The old man didn't remember her at first, but when he started to unstrap and politely get up from his chair, his face went pale. "Please stay in your seat," Ginny pleaded. "The rules of etiquette are different in zero-G." Inwardly, she wanted to make sure that the Flatlander didn't puke all over her. With an effort to maintain his dignity even while seated, Zimmerman introduced Professor Kristen Cardenas to Ginny. Soon the three of them were talking together the way passengers on a trip will, strangers yet shipmates. Ginny found that Cardenas was also an expert in nanotechnology, and they were both going to Moonbase at the personal request of Joanna Stavanger. She also learned that their real reason for allowing Joanna to coax them up to Moonbase was almost exactly the same as Ginny's own motivation. "Perhaps we should pool our resources," Zimmerman said. He was obviously uncomfortable in zero-G. Cardenas looked a little green, too. Ginny had gone to the meal dispenser for them and brought them prepackaged trays and slow-release anti-nausea patches, which they both stuck behind their ears. "What do you mean?" Ginny asked. It was impossible to eat in zero-G without spraying crumbs and droplets all around. The compartment's air circulation sucked them up, slowly, into the ventilator grids along the ceiling. Zimmerman started to gesture with his hands, then thought better of it. "You know the Stavanger woman much better than I or even Kristen. You could help us to convince her to allow us to remain at Moonbase indefinitely."
"I work for her," Ginny said, "but I can't say that I know her very well, not socially."
Chris Cardenas said, "Still, if we all want the same thing, we ought to present a united front."
"Fine by me," said Ginny, delighted to have a Nobel Prize winner and her mentor as unexpected allies.
Greg's face looked like a storm cloud when he stepped into the reception area beneath the rocket landing pads.
"What's the matter?" Joanna asked him.
"Ginny Anson," he snapped.
"Ginny?"
"She's on the incoming ship with Cardenas and Zimmerman."
"But she's supposed to be in Houston."
"She's on the ship. She thought she'd sneak in here without my knowing it. Thought I wouldn't bother checking the LTV's manifest."
Joanna immediately recognized the problem. Naturally, Greg would be suspicious of having the former director of the base suddenly pop in for a visit, especially when she hadn't told anyone she was coming or even asked permission to make the trip.
"They'll be coming down in a few minutes," Greg said in a tight-throated whisper. "Flight control has locked in on them."
Joanna nodded wordlessly, wondering what she could do or say to ease his misery.
"Where's Doug?" Greg asked her.
"He went up to the observation bubble," she said. "He likes to watch the spacecraft land." Greg made a sour face. "Everything's a game to Doug. Just a big entertainment." Impatiently, he went to the wall panel beside the hatch and flicked on the intercom.
15. Right down the pipe," said the flight controller's voice.
10.
5.
Green light," a different voice announced. The spacecraft's pilot, Greg assumed.
"Touchdown confirmed.
Shutting down.
Base power connected. The snake's on its way."
Greg paced impatiently across the small room. Doug came in through the door from the flight control center.
"Hi, Greg," he said.
His half-brother gave him a dark look in return. Joanna thought how strange it was that they could both wear the same color coveralls, but Doug's sky-blue jumpsuit looked bright and sunny, while Greg's seemed somehow darker, more ominous.
"This is your doing, isn't it?" Greg snapped.
"My doing? What?"
"Bringing Anson here."
"Ginny Anson?" Doug looked genuinely surprised.
"She's aboard this ship?"
Greg waved a finger in Doug's face.
"Don't play innocent with me, Doug. I know what you're doing, you and your Operation Bootblack."
"I didn't know Ginny Anson was coming here until this moment," Doug said evenly.
"You're a liar."
Joanna's breath caught in her throat. Greg stood red-faced before his half-brother, slightly taller but much slimmer. Doug seemed stunned by the accusation, his face frozen with shock, his hands clenching into fists at his sides.
"That's quite enough," Joanna said, stepping between them. "I won't stand for you two fighting like this."
But Doug smiled and stepped back, his hands relaxing.
"Honestly, Greg, I'm just as surprised as you are that Ginny's come here. As for Operation Bootstrap, okay, we're trying to make Moonbase profitable without costing you any cash flow. It's all to your benefit, really."
"Really?" Greg sneered.
"Really?"
said Doug, as pleasantly as a springtime breeze. The airlock hatch's signal chime interrupted them. Joanna and her two sons turned to the heavy metal hatch as the indicator light on its panel turned from red to amber, and one of the mission controllers came hustling into the reception area. She was a petite, almost frail-looking young woman, wearing the gray coveralls of the transportation division.
"Why do they give the heaviest jobs to the smallest kids?" Joanna wondered.
The hatch had to be swung open manually, and even though there was a pilot and co-pilot on this flight, standard procedure was for one of the controllers to be on hand to open the hatch from this side if necessary. It wasn't necessary. As soon as the indicator light went from amber to green, the heavy metal hatch swung open. Joanna felt a slight stir of air in the reception room. The air pressure on the other side of the hatch had not exactly matched the pressure on this side. The pilot pushed the hatch all the way open, grinning at the mission controller.
"See," he said, "there is a reason for carrying us up from Earth orbit after all."
"Then you ought to get paid as a doorman," said the controller.
He wasn't all that much bigger than she, Joanna realized. The pilot's eyes widened when he recognized Greg.
"Hey," he said to the controller, "don't talk that way in front of the boss."
Greg forced a smile for them as they passed him on their way to the flight control center. They didn't recognize Joanna, apparently. At least the pilot didn't. Then Ginny Anson stepped through the hatch. Right behind her came Chris Cardenas, and finally the lumbering form of Wilhelm Zimmermann. For an awkward moment, no one knew what to say. Greg looked like a smoldering volcano, Doug seemed nonplussed, and Joanna herself wondered what was going to happen. Then Zimmermann broke the silence.
"We seek asylum," he said with great dignity.
Moonbase Director's Office.
"Let me get this straight," Greg said. "You're seeking political asylum here at Moonbase?
You are now under the legal jurisdiction of the nation of Kiribati, is that not so?" Zimmermann asked.
"Legally, yes," said Greg.
"So, we seek asylum. Me from Switzerland, she from Canada."
The six of them sat around the circular conference table in Greg's office.